Lucas on Life.
Hello, welcome to Lucas on Life. I'm Jeff Lucas, and thanks so much for joining me at the end of what I hope was a happy Sunday. Watching a film that was shot back in the 1970s, I realized that there was something very different about the crowd scenes. Obviously, the fashions, the hairstyles and clothing were very dated. The 1970s, in my opinion, was a decade of great music and terrible fashion choices. Some of us can remember flared trousers, shoes to stagger around on with platform heels, and lapels on men's jackets that were so wide a sudden gust of wind could sweep a chap off to an overseas nation. But there was something else that was very different about the crowd scenes that I just couldn't put my finger on. The movie was set in New York, and people thronged Times Square, came up from the subways or sat around in restaurants. And then I realized what was so very different. People who were walking around were actually looking around. There were no smartphones clutched in their hands. Rather than being glued to their devices, people were taking in the view of the Big Apple, New York. Let's face it, in 2025, rather obviously, tech seems to have taken over, and it was supposed to make life better. Just a few decades ago, we had to wait in front of the TV for weekly broadcasts, turn to books or sluggish internet browsers on clunky desktops to find information. We had to rely on landline telephones in order to chat with friends. But today, our digital devices, our tech, let us entertain, work, socialize, and access information anywhere, anytime. Technology has propelled us into an era of constant digital engagement. With endless rewarding stimulation just a fingertip away, you might think that boredom has become a rare experience, and yet the reverse has happened. There's been a concerning rise in boredom among young people from 2009 to 2020, as revealed by a recent national survey. People are becoming increasingly bored, not despite all of our tech, but partly because of it. And all of this is making us distracted people. It's reported that on a typical day, young people receive a median of 237 notifications on their phones. Those notifications disrupt attention, slow reaction times, worsen task performance, and prompt people to turn away from their current activities in order to check their phones. So, tonight here on Lucas on Life, let's talk about tech. Are we masters of it, or is it mastering us? They are called notifications, the mingled blessing and curse of our internet-governed lives. My watch or phone dutifully informs me that I've got an appointment with an armed and dangerous dentist tomorrow, my plane is running late, rain is expected in 32 minutes, or my heart rate is running a little high, probably because of that delayed plane. I am therefore informed of breaking news, stock market fluctuations, and nudged by a reminder to pick up some milk at the supermarket. Notifications can even prevent future mishaps and tragedies. Later model cars not only beep us when we're wandering out of our lane, but automatically steer us back into safety and can even rebuke us if we're not paying attention to the road. Unfortunately, there are no notifications available to advise us that we're living in a beautiful moment, which is frustrating. Days of sheer bliss when the sky is a deep blue, when the sun warms but doesn't burn, and rich, easy laughter is shared with friends. These absolutely fabulous episodes are rare, and they should be enjoyed to the full. Recently, Kay and I joined a gaggle of dear friends for a few wonderfully poignant days in France. We had gathered to be with our host, a really close pal who had been given a terminal diagnosis. But there was nothing morose about our time together. We munched on almond croissants, apparently baked in heaven, sipped rosé wine, drank coffee in the same cobbled square each morning, and laughed hysterically at stories shared late into the night. One evening, I glanced across the room at our friend and wondered at the sight of his huge smile. Despite that gloomy diagnosis and the discomfort of his illness, he was determined to soak up the gravy of this precious time. as was I, except for those pesky notifications. Technology means that unless we take the unthinkable step of turning our phones off, more about that later, we therefore are at the mercy of relentless intrusion. There's a price to be paid for being continuously available. The cost is that we become unavailable to what is right in front of us right now. In France, I had no idea that I was living in one of the best days of my life, one that I wish I could return to. Something similar occurs because of that rather fabulous camera that is secreted into our phones. Watching a breathtaking sunset in Colorado, my wife Kay and I marveled at God's genius with a color palette. Ribbons of rich burnt orange entwined with fluorescent reds trailed across the fading blues of the twilight sky. But glancing around, we noticed others who were so wrapped in capturing the perfect photo of the moment that they missed the moment itself as they squinted at the skyborne masterpiece through their phones. And sometimes the sheer speed of life hurries us on, roughly shoves us forward when we should be stopping to look, to marvel, to worship. Annie Dillard offers a beautiful challenge. She said, "We are here to witness the creation and abet it. We are here to notice each thing so that each thing gets noticed. Together we notice not only each mountain shadow and each stone on the beach, but especially we notice the beautiful faces and complex natures of each other. Otherwise, creation would be playing to an empty house." Perhaps in the midst of another ordinary day that might well be filed under the heading of nothing much happened, there are people who this week will inspire or nudge us into a giggle. There's music to soothe or quicken our hearts. There are unmissable minutes that we might just miss if we're not careful. Let's take time to take our seats when God is putting on a show. Let's tame that tech. Let's pay attention to the road that we're on. We have been notified. The message that popped up on my computer screen seemed innocuous enough, announcing that it was time for my software to be updated. A single mouse click would launch the procedure. Usually I pause before performing this kind of techno task and ensure that my precious data is safe by backing it up. But that day, I was working on about 10 projects at once. Without thinking, I clicked. Big mistake. I became a victim of multitasking. 2 hours later, I was left holding a laptop that was damaged beyond repair, my hard drive nuked, my data wiped out. Book manuscripts, accounts, emails, they were all vaporized. I wish I could report that I responded to this crisis with quiet repose, affirming that the Lord gives and the Lord takes away. Instead, I believe that my screen was overheard in Jupiter. I spent 3 hours with a genius who valiantly tried to help me. I won't name the computer company, that would be quite wrong. Besides, I like the design of the piece of fruit that adorns my laptop, even though it's now only useful as a doorstop. A few days later, I popped into a loo in the motorway services, and having washed my hands, I stood for 30 seconds with my hands outstretched in a worship position, waiting for the hot air to dry them. And then the truth dawned. I was actually waiting in vain for a vending machine to dry my hands. Passers-by were rather bemused by the chap who seemed lost in adoration before a silver box that dispenses contraceptives and breath mints. Both of these episodes happened because I was multitasking, and tech seems to nudge us into that habit. Texting while I was walking into the said motorway loo, I'd pause my texting to answer a call, and then I got an email. Focused, I most certainly had not been. Unfocused and distracted is what most of us are. Allegedly, most people who use a tablet, such as an iPad, do so while watching TV. Half of tablet users, while in front of the goggle box, will visit social networking sites, 2/3 will check their emails, and most will be browsing other sites, all while watching TV. According to one academic, we're living in an age of infomania. Armed with a smartphone that also serves as a camera, calculator, stock market scoreboard, web browser, email inbox, gaming console, appointment calendar, voice recorder, guitar tuner, weather forecaster, GPX texter, tweeter, Facebook updater, music player and flashlight. Wow, we're all constantly multitasking. While having lunch with friends, we surreptitiously check to see what our other friends are doing and even post photographs of the cheese and pickle sandwich that we're snacking on so that the universe can stand amazed in awe and wonder. And although we think we're doing several things at once, tech-driven multitasking is a powerful and diabolical illusion. O. Miller, a neuroscientist and one of the world experts on divided attention, says that our brains are not wired to multitask well. When people think they're multitasking, he said, they're actually switching from one task to another very rapidly. And every time they do, there's a cognitive cost. According to a study at the University of Sussex, constant multitasking actually damages our brains. They found out that people who regularly multitask have lower brain density in the region of their brain responsible for empathy, cognitive control, and emotional control. Other studies have found that multitasking reduces our productivity by 40%. So, let's turn things off. Let's turn off our phones once in a while. Turn off browser notifications. Turn off email notifications. We can attend to all of those things later. Surely we don't need them right now. Again, more about this in a moment, but why don't we build technology breaks into our schedules, both at work and at home? To be the most beneficial, they should be for a minimum period of 1 to 3 hours at a time, according to the experts. That enables us to engage with people or tasks in deeper and different ways. It's also recommended that we avoid all screens, which stimulate far more than they relax, for the first and last hour of the day, so that we can begin and end with uncluttered focus. So, stay with me here and allow me to share a few more reasons for us to just turn off those pesky phones for a while. We've been talking about technology. Are we in control of it, or is it in control of us? So, as I wrap up the show, let's think of five reasons to put our phones down for a while. As I said at the beginning, it's a vaguely depressing sight as we wander through any airport, sit on any train. We see hundreds of fellow slaves, people ignoring people, transfixed instead by the small screen that they clutch. Now, obviously, technology can be a wonderful tool, including the internet generally and the smartphone specifically, but it shouldn't take over our lives. Whoever thought that our gods would be so small, handheld devices before which we kneel, figuratively speaking, in humble homage. So let's do ourselves a favor, dethrone that god, give our phones a rest, and for good reasons. The first is that that little screen might be sucking the life out of us. We tend to think that information is power, that we're invigorated when we're in the know, but that's a lie. In 1988, Gordon MacDonald wrote the book, the classic book, Restoring Your Spiritual Passion, and pointed out that we often live as emotionally drained souls because we're overloaded with choices and information. That was 3 years before the dawn of widespread email and internet use. Now we're drowning, awash with useless knowledge. Reason number two to turn off the phone, the world doesn't need to know that we like porridge. Before Facebook, we never called a friend after breakfast and said, guess what, I just ate oatmeal. I've got to hang up because I've got 4,377 friends to call. Bye. The world will keep turning if we fail to report that we've eaten, gone shopping, or have recovered from a season of constipation. Honestly, it will. Reason number three, while finding out about people, we are missing out on people. Here's the news. Unless we're extremely selective, those hundreds or thousands of friends, say on Facebook, they're not our friends. They won't be snacking on the sausage rolls at the bash that follows our funerals. But if we half listen to the people that we're with while concentrating on the souls that we'll never meet, our actual friendships will go offline at high speed. Let's not miss out on engaging with interesting, colourful, needy, inspiring people in favour of the faceless, apart from a dodgy profile photo on Facebook. Reason number four, life was meant to be about conversation, not a newsflash. Twitter, now called X, is most often about declaration rather than conversation. But life was never meant to be a series of pithy pronouncements made in 140 characters or less. Let's not issue press releases, but rather have real conversations instead. And then finally, our phones won't feel hurt if we ignore them or switch them off. I've got a friend who's wise, loving, he's a brilliant listener. Until his phone rings, beeps or chirps, he is then compelled to answer it, even though he might be in a critical conversation with someone who's sharing a marriage crisis, a major career change, or a forthcoming surgery. There might be a person on our phones, but our phone is not a person. So let's take control. Let's be the boss. Let's ignore those phones. Being a machine, they won't get wounded, feel neglected, or withdraw into a sulky silence, not talking to us for 3 days. Believe me, our phones will be ready to talk to us again whenever we are. Oops, my phone just beeped, demanding my instant attention. And although it takes the greatest effort, I've made a decision. It can wait. See you next week.
Lucas on Life.